So the DUP is deeply sorry for how it handled Northern Ireland's botched green energy scheme, the RHI scandal. That was the message from the party leader, Arlene Foster, as she addressed the RHI scandal at her party's conference at the weekend.
The public inquiry has been difficult for many individually and painful for the party collectively. No party would want to have all of its dealings exposed for all to see at a public inquiry, especially in the unique system of government we have with the struggles and strains required to make it work. But I make no excuses. Today, as leader of this party, I apologise. As a party, we are deeply, deeply sorry for the mistakes we made and for the things we got wrong during that period.
So that apology from the party, not from Arlene Foster personally, from the party, comes in a quite different tone ahead of Sir Patrick Coughlan's conclusions from the RHI inquiry panel. Quite a different tone for how the DUP were talking to some journalists around the country who were covering the story. Let's just remind ourselves, shall we, how the DUP were handling the conversation. Here's Arlene Foster on BBC One in December 2016 after the Jonathan Bell interview.
In June 2013, consultants told your department to seriously consider tiering. It didn't happen. Why not?
Well, they didn't, because that went out for consultation then from June to October of 2013. After that consultation, instead of officials bringing me back recommendations as to what I should do, no recommendations were forthcoming. Therefore, I didn't have any information to tier scheme.
But it's under your
and
watch.
At that time,
well, people
Stephen,
vote for you to
yes,
protect
Stephen,
our
so
money.
I'm supposed to have a crystal ball.
No,
in
the consultants
to
were saying
issue.
It.
The consultants didn't say it to me, they said it to my officials.
And so
the
it's
officials,
their fault again.
And the officials did not bring me any information
so it's
in
their
relation
fault.
To the recommendations. Well, how am I supposed to know if I don't get any submissions
so
in relation to the
matter? So what's the point of you being minister if we're not holding you accountable?
We you
don't
are
vote
holding
for the,
me accountable.
People don't vote for the officials.
You are holding me accountable.
People vote for a politician.
Which is why I'm going to the Assembly on Monday to set out all of the difficulties around this scheme and why we find ourselves in this situation.
Then DUP Gregory Campbell. Was there a sorry on behalf of his party from Gregory in January 2017? No.
As you put it previously, you're going to keep digging. And as I responded, digging works both ways.
You dig
Remember
away.
Remember that? Remember
dig
that?
Dig away. And I think people responded to you in that they were asking you, were you threatening me?
And what way would you suggest that that's a threat?
I'm telling
why
you, that's
you
what people
that?
Sent to you. You can dig away into
well,
me, Gregory.
Why would you suggest that?
You can dig away into
see,
you can you, dig away into me.
See, Stephen,
I'm telling
seems...
you now. I'm telling you now that you dig away as much as makes your heart content. I will continue to ask the questions I'm asking.
You are very good at posing questions. The point is, you're not very good at answering them. That's the point. That's the digging. That's
okay.
The digging I'm talking about.
Okay, and dig away.
And Arlene Foster, who says her party is sorry now, let's have a listen as to what she said about being subject to a so-called trial by media during her speech to the Assembly in December 2016.
What we have here is trial by television, not by the appropriate authorities. What we have here are facts being disregarded in a fevered quest to build my political gallows. What we have here is nothing more than shameful political opportunism. The central charges against me in this debate today haven't even been considered by the PAC or any independent investigation for that matter, let alone decided upon.
So, the question this morning is Arlene Foster, the DUP's leader, is their apology wholesome and full? And do you accept it? Very few political parties ever apologise. The DUP have done it. Maybe you want to pick up the phone today. 03030 80 55 55. The text 81771. The email nolan@bbc.co.uk. So the political editor of the newsletter, Sam McBride, kicking us off this morning. Morning to you, Sam.
Good morning, Stephen.
We did that this morning just to highlight the difference in tone from when the BBC and yourself and Belfast Telegraph and Daily Mirror and every Irish News, every journalist in the country was looking at this story. The DUP's tone when we were looking at it and Arlene Foster's tone at her party conference.
It's a radically different tone, and you mentioned there that parties very rarely apologise. That's right. It's one of the things that always strikes me as counterintuitive, because generally when parties do apologise, when politicians do apologise, it's generally well received by the public. The public realise that politicians are flawed. In fact, the public probably have a far darker view of politicians than is fair. So when they actually hold their hands up and say, look, we've got this wrong, we need to apologise, I think generally that plays quite well. But it's been very clear here that Arlene Foster did not want to do this. We're almost 2 years down the line from the point where this really erupted as a major scandal, almost 3 years down the line from the point where the scheme had to be closed, where she knew how bad it was. And so I think it's fair to say at this point, she didn't want to have to do this. But we know that within the DUP, there has been pressure about this. We know that it was raised recently, several weeks ago, at a party executive meeting. There is internal discontent within the party about this. And I think that was reflected in how the party reacted to her apology on Saturday. There was very warm applause in the hall. There was a sense of relief. Some of the people, members of the DUP standing around me, were giving verbal assent to that. They were happy to see that. And I think councillors in particular are relieved about this, because they are hitting the doors in a couple of months' time, campaigning to get re-elected. They don't want to have this hanging around their neck.
And by the way, the first clip that we played, I'm just looking at it here. When I said in December 2016, this is when Arlene Foster spoke, she did speak to the public. In other words, we broadcast it after the Jonathan Bell interview that same night in December 2016. She had recorded it that day before the Jonathan Bell interview was seen by her or anyone else. Does she necessarily, Sam, have to follow this up with a personal apology? Or might some people say, do you know what? She's apologised on behalf of her party. That's enough.
I think you'll get people on both sides of that debate. But I think that the way that it was phrased was very carefully phrased. This was not Arlene Foster rowing back from what she told the public inquiry just a few months ago, where she was really essentially telling them that there was nothing that she could think of for which she felt personally responsible in this entire situation. That was in striking contrast to the evidence of senior civil servants. It was in striking contrast to the evidence of people from the DUP, like Timothy Kearns, for instance, where there was an acceptance. Look, there are several things here that we got badly wrong, and it's very obvious. Now, Arlene Foster had a very different tone. So it was not clear to me from what was a lengthy section of her speech on Saturday, and it wasn't for lack of space. I mean, she gave this quite considerable space in a very important speech, but over several pages of her speech, it was very much the party is apologising. I'm apologising as leader of the party on behalf of the party. She wasn't saying what she was apologising for in particular. So there was a generic sense that this was a corporate apology. And I suppose that leaves it open to the public to assume what they want really from that. Some people will take from that this is a genuine apology, that it's an apology from Arlene Foster, who has really learned her lesson, who has realised that what she has done here was not perhaps up to the standards that could have been expected of a minister in some of these situations. Other people will look at it more sceptically and will say, well, actually, she's apologising for the party. She's not apologising for herself.
And Christopher Stalford, Sam, on Sunday Politics with Mark Crowler, said the apology was both a personal apology from Arlene and on behalf of the party.
That's right. He was very clear about that. I'm not sure, when you look at the text of the speech, and she has stuck to the text of it, that it's really anywhere near as clear as that. I mean, she is very clearly saying, I'm apologising as leader of the DUP. So I think that, for instance, if you look at some of the various issues here, her special advisor, Andrew Crawford, passing details of cost controls that were coming up to his relatives, is she apologising for that, or is that something that she that really she thinks it's for him to apologise for? Is she apologising for not reading the legislation when she brought it to the Assembly? It's not entirely clear, and maybe she still thinks that was reasonable in the circumstances. I think this gives rise to further questions. And
well, why don't we nail it? Why don't we just contact the DUP this morning and ask her, and ask the party, what was she apologising for?
One of the difficulties there, of course, is that Arlene Foster is not terribly keen to give interviews at the moment. She was on the Andrew Marr show yesterday. She does a lot more national interviews where she's being asked about Brexit at the moment. She's not so keen to give interviews to newspapers in Northern Ireland. She's not so keen to give interviews to the likes of yourself at this point. And it is these sorts of issues that she will be asked to clarify. So whether it's now, whether it's at the time when the inquiry report comes out or whenever, I think this is something that will have to be closed off because she has left it up in the air.
I think Arlene spoke to Gareth Gordon the other day. I'll check that, but I'm pretty sure in my head she spoke to Gareth. Michael in Belfast, first call of the day. Morning to you, Michael.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, that apology does nothing for me. She loved the party, herself and the party. She never apologised personally, Stephen. And we have to remember that she was the person in charge of RHI at the beginning. So she should have apologised for a lot of things with regards to RHI, but she never bothered. So to me, it was an empty apology.
Well, Arlene Foster told me back at the time, December 2016, look, she doesn't have a crystal ball. If officials weren't passing on concerns to her, what could she do about it, Michael?
Well, Stephen, let me tell you something. She's not stupid. She's a barrister. I think that's what her thing is. She's a barrister. So if she blamed her spad, she blamed another minister. She blamed everybody but herself, Stephen. That's the way I look at it. You know?
Patricia McBride joining us this morning, 0303 80 55 55. Let's remember, Patricia, that this is coming ahead of Sir Patrick Coughlan's conclusions. Is this a sign that Arlene Foster is going nowhere? She's staying as leader and she's going to battle out whatever that inquiry concludes.
Well, good morning, Stephen. I think that this apology, first of all, it's the right thing to do. But the question, as Sam has already raised, is whether it goes far enough. And there's a few different aspects to that. Strategically, at this point in time, Arlene Foster can really do no more, as I see it, than issue a corporate apology on behalf of the DUP. Because until she sees Sir Patrick Coughlan's report on RHI, she's not going to know how much personal culpability he is going to hold in respect of her.
But Patricia, she doesn't need Sir Patrick to tell her about herself. Presumably she can conclude whatever she decides about her own role in all of this.
Well, that's essentially getting somebody to say sorry for something that they're not quite sure they're going to be held accountable for just yet. So I think that that's why this is an interesting piece of political strategy, because depending on the level of blame that is apportioned to individuals by Sir Patrick Coughlan's report, then Arlene Foster may come out and say, I failed to do X, Y or Z, and for that I am personally sorry. So I think this is probably as far as she can go right now. But the other thing that I would say is that an apology has two aspects to it. The first of it is saying that you're sorry, and the second part is making amends for what you've done. And, you know, all of us in our personal lives, you know, we have to do that when we do something wrong, when we get something wrong in our personal or professional lives. And, you know, at home, when you have to say sorry to your partner or your loved one or someone, you're bringing them a bunch of flowers or a box of chocolates. So the question I have is what is the bunch of flowers that the DUP is bringing forward that goes along with saying that they're sorry? And that has to be, when are you coming back into a talks process? We are for the first time in over 20 years in a position politically where we neither have an assembly nor do we have any talks process in place regarding bringing that assembly back into play. And that's a very, very scary place to be. And we have to go back and remember that RHI was the straw that broke the camel's back and brought down the assembly on top of the issues around Irish language, on top of other issues around Red Sky and NAMA. It just became too much to let the DUP continue to run. And that's the position that Sinn Féin would take. So now if we're in that position, what is the bunch of flowers? What is the box of chocolates? What are you going to do to make amends? That's the question for the DUP.
Jim in South Belfast. Morning, Jim.
Hello, good morning, Stephen. I hope you're well.
Good morning, Jim.
Nice weekend. I just want to make a comment, Stephen, about what Mrs. Foster said on Saturday. I believe she was genuine and honest and upfront with the DUP voters, and you have to remember that's what it's all about, the DUP voters. She stood up there, and it takes a very strong person to stand up and say sorry. That's exactly what she did. I'm not happy with what went on with the DUP and the RHA and other things, but I'm happy that the leader was able to stand up and say sorry. And I believe it was on behalf of herself and her party.
And do you think, Jim, the DUP would have said it but for the public inquiry?
Well, if there hadn't been a public inquiry, I don't think she would have had to say sorry.
Well, why not? The whole point is RHI happened. The public inquiry is simply exposing to the public what went on in RHI. All of the different players knew what their part was in it because they were in it.
Well, Stephen,
so that's why I'm asking the question, but for the public knowing about this, not through politicians of any political persuasion, but through the public inquiry, do you think the DUP would have apologised?
Well, how can you apologise for something that you weren't wrong in the first place in? But if they feel they've done wrong, which I do, listen, I felt and I still feel that some people need drop kicks. And I'm being honest about that and being straight, and I'm not on my own.
What do you mean, dropkick? What do you mean?
I mean they need to fall on their own sword. And I'm not talking about the leader. I'm talking about people that we don't vote for as voters, as the electorate. You understand? People in the background. They've done wrong, and they need to repent for it. And by doing that, I feel that they should not be a part of the Democratic Unionist Party. That's a personal opinion, but that's my opinion.
030-30-80-55-55. Sam McBride, is this a sign that Arlene Foster is going to tough it out? Is her leadership not in jeopardy? Has she got the party support?
Well, it's certainly a sign that she is keen to stay as leader. I mean, the speech on Saturday was very clear about that. She sees herself as the person who is going to fix these problems that she says the public inquiry has identified. That's very clear. That is what she has been saying internally to the party. That's what she's now saying to the public and to the wider party. I think, though, picking up on the bunch of flowers analogy from Patricia, that in some ways we have got the answer to already in her speech, because what she is trying to do here is present herself as a reformist. She is trying to say that the bunch of flowers that she's bringing, if you like, is to fix Stormont. So she's talking in really quite radical terms. And I think it would seem more radical if it came from another individual. But she is talking about changes to how SPADs operate, the number of SPADs, how they work within the system. Radical changes potentially being suggested to the Northern Ireland Civil Service. She's talking about integrating it with the Whitehall Civil Service. She's not saying that should definitely happen, but she's floating that as an idea. She's talking about transparency in government, something that the DUP were never known for. She's talking about bringing the smaller parties more into the executive, something that neither the DUP nor Sinn Féin were known for during their time in the PAR. So those are quite significant things that she's saying she can do. The question is whether those other parties and the public trust her as the person to fix this system.
And the message, the headline message, certainly the headline grabber from that conference, Sam, was the leader of the DUP apologising for RHI. Might that go down badly within the DUP, that here they have their party conference, people are not talking about their policies, they're talking about RHI again. They can't get away from it.
I'm not sure it will go down badly. I think, I mean, the mood that was in the hall on Saturday, and party conferences are these days essentially verbal press releases from the stage where everybody claps almost no matter what is said. But there was clear and warm applause. It was enthusiasm for what she said about this. There was relief in the room. This was not something they were in any way worried about in terms of what she had said. The party knows that this is a major problem for it. It needs to get rid of it. And I think there was a sense in the room that maybe what she did on Saturday, albeit perhaps 2 years too late, but what she did on Saturday maybe has at least started the process of finally uncoupling the party from this issue.
If that's true, Sam, why didn't they hold their hands up at the time and say, we've got this wrong, we're sorry? How would it have played out differently, might they be thinking, if 2 years ago they had have said, look, for our role in this, we're sorry?
people who know Arlene Foster very well say that she's somebody who struggles to say sorry. She's somebody who sees that as a sign of weakness. She doesn't like to do U-turns. She doesn't like to change course. No person likes to change course, I suppose it is fair to say. But Arlene Foster is somebody who is a pretty robust figure. She is somebody who really does not like to be in the situation that she was in on Saturday. So it has taken a long period of time to get her to this place. I think that there will not be many people in the DUP who look at what has happened over the last couple of years and don't realise that this really ought to have happened at a much earlier stage. And certainly, if it had happened, it's difficult not to ask the question, where would we be now in terms of Stormont?
Mm-hmm. William in Belfast. Morning, William.
Stephen, something speaking. See, when the cat is out of the bag, anyway, maybe a lot of cats in this bag, there's nowhere else to go, only say sorry. It's a political move. Oh, get some sympathy for all the anomalies. So the whole thing is just silly even to talk about. And in fact, an apology should be only an apology when somebody's made a mistake. See, when it's a lot of intention and cover-up, it's not an apology at all.
Well, there's no cover-up, is there? Well, they've been asked questions and they have delivered them to the RHI inquiry. Let me bring his EP's Jim Wells into this. Morning to you, Jim.
Morning, Stephen.
Is it frustrating for MLAs like you, Jim, that here we are, we're not talking about your party's policies from your conference, we're talking about your party's role in the RHI scandal?
Stephen, I think it takes a lot of courage to stand up in front of your party delegates and do what Arlene did on Saturday. I think, as Christopher Stalford said, this was an apology not only on behalf of the party, but also a personal apology from Arlene Foster.
Why did it need Christopher Stalford to make that clear rather than Arlene making that clear in her speech?
Well, I have to say, Stephen, I was at the conference, and I have to say everyone in the room took it as that. There was no ambiguity, and that's why I think when people like Sam McBride raised the issue, Christopher made it clear that this was all-encompassing. I mean, politicians can't win, Stephen. When we get it wrong and don't admit to it, they get criticised by people like yourself. And when uniquely, and I have been to party conferences for 43 years, this is unique. This has never happened before. When someone stands up and says, right, folks, I'm sorry, we got it wrong, they still get criticised. I mean, there's really nowhere to turn here. And Stephen, can you quote me one example of any other major political party in the United Kingdom where this has happened? I think this took courage. And I think the reaction from the audience, the packed audience on Saturday, indicates that the party welcomed this and support Arlene in going through a very difficult time.
Why do you think it took 2 years?
I think, Stephen, what happened is, you know, your programme has almost been obsessed by the inquiry. And Sam McBride's there. Sam has, you know, cut his journalistic piece on this particular issue. For 111 days, there has been the inquiry led by Sir Patrick Coughlan. And through that, it has emerged just how badly Arlene Foster was let down by just every strand of her department and much further. The Energy Savings Trust, the SPADs, government officials, everybody, frankly...
Are you going to dump on everybody else here, Jim?
No, I'm not, Stephen. But you will admit that everything that could have gone wrong with RHI did go wrong, and everybody who seemed to touch it at all made major mistakes. And I think we're somewhere in the territory of Amber Rudd. Amber Rudd resigned as minister over the immigration issue from Jamaica. And it transpired that when she did resign, that she had been given dreadful advice by her officials, on which she based her statements. But she had to go, and she resigned.
Well, if she had to go, who has gone from your party?
Well, Stephen,
if you draw that analogy, who has gone from your party?
Well, first of all...
So Andrew Crawford, who inappropriately... leaked information, he's still in a cosy little job, isn't he? Arlene Foster, in fact, Andrew Crawford's working on Brexit, of all things.
Yep.
The SPADs are still in jobs. Arlene Foster's still in her same job. If you draw that analogy, who hasn't been looked after by your party?
Well, first of all, Stephen, I need to make the point that Amber Rudd has returned when it transpired that she was very badly advised. I think we're waiting for the results of Sir Patrick Coughlan's inquiry, which we suspect will be coming maybe April, May next year.
But that's the point, Jim. Should your party not be showing the people of Northern Ireland that no matter who finds what, your party will do the right thing? Why do you need to wait on results from an outside body. Where is the integrity within your party to say, these are the people got it wrong, these are the consequences? Where is any of that?
Well, Stephen, first of all, I think we have banned up, and Arlene has made it very clear, uniquely, and you still haven't answered my point, is have you ever seen this happen before in any party anywhere in the UK? I certainly haven't. Arlene has made it very clearly that we got things wrong.
Is that a fair point, Patricia?
Well, I think, Stephen, what would have taken real courage was apologising to your Deputy First Minister, the late Martin McGuinness, at the time, and saying, you know something, Martin, I think there's something wrong here, and I think we need to take a step back and look at it now and fix it so that we can save this Assembly and this administration. That's what would have taken courage. And, you know, Sam's points are well made about Arlene Foster talking in her speech on Saturday about structural reforms of structural changes within Stormont around special advisers, around the operations of the civil service. But none of those will address the fundamental issues that are outstanding that were dealt with in the draft agreement that we had last February, which the DUP could not sell to its own party membership. We have to look at marriage equality. We have to look at reproductive rights. We have to look at issues around the Irish language speaker community and how they are treated. And we have to get the issues of RHI tackled. All of those issues are still there. Structural changes in Stormont aren't going to change that. The issue of withholding funding for legacy inquests is still there. And there's a court case where Arlene Foster herself has been seen to be obstructive in withholding that funding. And it is still not forthcoming. All of those issues need to be tackled. But it's not enough to just say, let's fix the operating framework. We have to actually have agreement on the outstanding issues.
Here's Walter and Maura. Morning, Walter.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning.
Yes. As I understand the Leisure people there, I think the only reason why Arlene Foster made a public apology for her party is because the possibility of an election, a general election coming up, due to the mess that we're in. I think, really, it was very clever of her, trying to get us people who vote for her party to forgive them for what such a mess they've made of everything they have done since they've been elected.
Well, Walter, you could argue they can't win. You ask for an apology, and then when she gives it, it's not enough.
No, it's not. She should have made the apology a long time ago. The apology that she has made now is because of this Brexit carry-on. And as I said, something else I would just say to you, Arlene Foster got in the bed, if you like, with the Conservatives, and she should have thought she should know her enemies, but she should know her friends better. This was going on. She was never told about it. Who under goodness wrote and made this thing up for Theresa May? She was telling Arlene Foster and the rest of us that everything was okay. We're not going to have this done. We're not going to have that done. But she knew all along what she was writing.
Well, what more? If we come back to this apology from Arlene Foster about RHI, what more could she do to win back your trust, Walter?
She couldn't do anything because she left it too late. The DUP, as far as I'm concerned, is dead in the water. I would never, ever vote again for DUP.
Don't think they're dead in the water with 10 MPs, the most MLAs, a huge mandate from the people of Northern Ireland. I don't think that's dead in the water, Walter.
Oh, yeah, but let's put it like this. That was for the last election. What will happen when we get a new election? Do you think she's going to have the vote? I personally don't. She'll not have mine. The party would not have mine.
Why not? Arlene Foster stood up and apologised on behalf of her party. Why not?
She left it too late, Steve. She left it too late as far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure there'd be quite a number of people the same as myself.
If they changed leader, if the DUP changed leader, would that make a difference to you?
I shouldn't think so, because Arlene Foster made that decision for the party. She should have made the actual thing a long time ago. She should have made the apology a long time ago. Not
Jim Wells?
Well, first, I just want to answer a point that Patricia made. This was the excuse for the bringing down of the executive, not the reason. I mean, Sinn Féin were quite content to have a short, quick inquiry way back in December 2016. But, of course, that famous meeting in the Felons Club where they were told basically to get out. And, of course, we would be back in devolution tomorrow morning if we were allowed to. We never pulled out of Stormont. We were the party that could go back in to discuss these and many other issues if Sinn Féin hadn't put a block on that. I just think, you know, there are people out there who would never accept anything that Arlene said. But I think it's absolutely vital that she dealt with this issue because there is an even bigger issue out there, and that's Brexit. And who is the best DUP leader to lead the party and the province through this very, very difficult, turbulent time between now and March the 29th? And the vast majority of the people in that room believe it's Arlene Foster. And therefore, she had to deal with this issue and then to move on with the most difficult constitutional matter in the history of the United Kingdom.
Jim, just before we go to the news here, can I just talk about the elephant in the room one second? If you trust Arlene Foster's judgment so much, isn't she part of the DUP senior management who have thrown you into the political wilderness?
Stephen, I have had differences with Arlene and the party leadership for 3 years, but can I make it clear that I have to set those aside and realise that we are facing the most difficult issue as a country that we've faced for 50, 60 years. And the biggest issue here, of course, is getting the will of the people implemented and getting Northern Ireland out of Europe on exactly the same basis as every other part of the United Kingdom. Who is the best person to lead Northern Ireland in that battle? And my answer is Arlene Foster. So therefore, it's time to set aside any difficulties and personal problems we may have and give her our 100% support. Because, frankly, Stephen, no other political leader could have dealt with the 2 years that Arlene Foster has faced. She's had RHI, she's had Brexit, she has had the fall of the Assembly, and she's had some of her MPs not behaving particularly well. And nobody else, I think, could have sustained that pressure and got through those battles and still left standing. And she is the person to lead us. And that's why there's so many attacks upon her, because out there people know that she's the person that can deliver Brexit as part of the UK government, as part of supporting the Conservative Party. And therefore, she deserves everyone's support, no matter where they're coming from.
When's the last time you spoke to her?
About a year ago. Because remember, Stephen, there have been difficulties, personal difficulties, but I'm not going to allow those to overshadow the really important issue here, the issue that I want to see delivered, and that's getting Northern Ireland and the UK out of
here. I'm just raising the point about you, Jim, for this reason, that you yourself have spoken publicly about the ruthlessness that there is within the DUP towards you, is what you've said in the past.
Yes.
And it's interesting, and let the public make up their own mind, that here, when there are questions being asked about Arlene Foster, when people are being reminded about her role in RHI, here is someone who is talking about having been dealt so ruthlessly by the party, standing up for her and supporting her. And
Yes, I agree with that. I can see the point you're trying to make, but I have to be true to myself. I have to accept that my situation is minor in comparison to this huge constitutional crisis that we're facing as a nation. And the last thing that anybody needs is dissident backbenchers at this difficult time. So I'm saying very clearly, I support Arlene Foster and the party leadership and her 10 MPs 110% and the excellent work they've been doing to get us out of the European Union on the same basis as the rest of the United Kingdom.
Well, look,
and my situation will have to sit and wait until we get this crucial issue out of the way, and therefore I'm not going to do anything to cause the remotest difficulty to the party, because I believe what they're doing is absolutely right.
Sam McBride from the newsletter still with us this morning. Morning again, Sam.
Morning, Steve.
Good morning. What's your analysis of the DUP's strategy towards the media? And I'm thinking in a world where we see what Donald Trump and how Donald Trump reacts, President Trump reacts when journalists ask questions that they don't like, that he doesn't like. And I noticed you tweeting at the weekend how difficult it has been for the newsletter to get a political interview with Arlene Foster. Do you think the DUP's strategy, and I don't think there would be too many journalists that would argue that they're not aggressive towards the media when they need to be. Many other political parties are like that too. You know, Sinn Féin very much like that too, Sam. Do you think they will reanalyse that, or is that just how the DUP is?
I think the DUP has always had a curious
relationship with the media, because right from the early days of Ian Paisley, he was a brilliant publicist, a brilliant self-publicist, somebody who was incredibly adept at getting himself into the papers, getting himself onto the airwaves, and yet also had a, as you say, at points a very aggressive and a very derogatory view of journalists. Now, with Ian Paisley, I think that there was almost a caricature which he built of himself, where he would say one thing on camera, and in the minute which the camera was switched off, he would have a big laugh with the journalists. So there was almost an element of two sides to him. But certainly, this is something which is very deeply ingrained within the DUP, a distrust of the media, a view of the media as somehow part of the establishment, even though now, of course, the DUP and Sinn Féin really are the establishment in Northern Ireland at the Stormont, or certainly over the last 10 years they were. But I think that that is something which is very deep, very deeply ingrained there. What we have seen with Arlene Foster is that when she came in as a leader, there was quite an interesting period where she really went out of her way to show that she was a different type of leader. She, on her first day as leader, brought in the newsletter and the Irish News for interviews. She brought in BBC Spotlight. All of those were people to whom, at the end of Peter Robinson's period, he was not giving interviews to. She was really going out of her way to say that I'm somebody who's very different here. But as the pressure came on over RHI, we saw her really retreating a lot from that position, not wanting to face difficult questions, not handling those questions very well when she was asked those questions. And I think it's fair to say that there has been a degree of concern within the DUP that when they do put her up for difficult interviews, very often what comes out of it is a new problem for the party. So we had the crocodile issue came from a journalist's question, and I think from Noel McAdam at the Belfast Telegraph. We had all sorts of issues where even in quite straightforward interviews, she was just saying the wrong thing or getting her tone wrong. So I think it's both a concern about Arlene Foster and her ability in those situations, but also probably an attempt by some people in the party perhaps to punish those who have asked awkward questions and really make a point that they will not be getting access.
If we just extrapolate this slightly, you know, if you look at President Trump, the public support for him does not seem to be waning, no matter how aggressive he is towards his political opponents or indeed the media. If we then look at Northern Ireland, look at how Sammy Wilson dealt with those business leaders when they came out and said they supported this deal. He said that they were puppets of the NIO, they were dancing to the NIO's tune. I'm paraphrasing here, but this is the general meaning of what Sammy was saying. Sir Geoffrey Donaldson told Mark Crothers on The View that business leaders probably hadn't even read the document. So they don't hold back. If they're slapped, they punch back. Is that effective, and is that a necessity in 2018 for a political party?
I'm not sure that it's right to say that it's a necessity, but it's certainly something which many people in the DUP will look at and say, well, look at our record, look where this has got us. It can't have done us that much harm if we have got to the position in which we are. I think also you have to say that when you look at Donald Trump, it is clear that the public today at least tolerate behaviour which perhaps once would have been seen as unconscionable, something which would have got a politician into a situation where he would have lost votes. And therefore, the DUP are a party which is very adept at observing what is going on elsewhere in the world. They learned from Alistair Campbell. They learned from Tony Blair. And I think that they are certainly watching what is going on and learning from that. I think, though, having said all that, it's difficult for Arlene Foster to stand up on Saturday to say that one of the key things that she has to learn from the RHI scandal is the need for transparency, the need for being open and frank with the public, and then declining to do interviews with the press in Northern Ireland. So I think that, yes, in the short term, you can do this, but over a long
period of time... Well, she did some interviews, didn't she? She did do some interviews.
To the best of my knowledge, she didn't do any press interviews. She did do some broadcast interviews, but those sort of longer sit-down interviews, half an hour with the journalist, I think that's where there is concern within the DUP as to what she says. But certainly, I think it's fair to say, if you look at the DUP's record, if you look at the number of seats they have, I think it's fair to say that even though on an issue like RHI, there is a lot of public anger, a lot of public distrust as to what has gone on there, it hasn't necessarily translated into people saying that is the predominant issue when they go into the ballot, into voting in the booth. So certainly there are other issues that I think are more to the fore of voters in Northern Ireland at this point.
How were you received at the conference on Saturday? And did you ask for an interview and did you get one?
I was received very very courteously, and there was actually a very large national media interest in the conference, which is very unusual. Even last year, after the confidence and supply arrangement had been struck, the DUP were expecting a lot of national journalists. There actually weren't that many who showed up. On Saturday, it was a very different situation. But no, I mean, there are certainly no issues with the party in a broader sense. I think there's just a very specific issue there in terms of trying to get an interview. We did ask for an interview. It's something of a tradition, I suppose, that once a year, as a newspaper, most of the newspapers will sit down with party leaders. They will ask them difficult questions. For instance, Mary Lou McDonald, as the new leader of Sinn Féin, agreed to do an interview with the newsletter over the summer. But we're in this curious situation where, as a pro-union paper, in terms of our editorial stance, the leader of unionism is not quite so obliging at this point.
OK, Sam McBride, thank you very much indeed. Jim and Ardoyne. Morning, Jim.
Stephen, I have nothing against anybody, but a 480 million scandal. Would anybody in Westminster survive that? What about the National Health?
Well, don't forget that the DUP then, some ministers and things worked behind the scenes, and they got a cap on the spend introduced. They went to court and they got a cap introduced, Jim.
But at the end of the day, it was still £490 million down the drain.
It was projected. It was not down the drain. That was a projected figure, and that didn't happen yet. There's a yearly cap, and they've got to go and argue in court for that cap to still be there. So the £490 million didn't happen, Jim.
Yet it hasn't happened. Do we
not
know
yet.
Do we know how much has been lost? All I'm saying, Stephen, is this here. Would you survive in Westminster? What about the National Health, the hospital, the schools and the roads? They're very, very arrogant, and I think they should come back and talk to you again, because I think you're a great commentator.
Well, I'm not a commentator first, thank you.
Whatever you call your name, you
know. Jim, just to deal with that, and then let's move on, all right? The time the Nolan Show doesn't survive is not when a politician or a political party boycotts the show. It's when the people of Northern Ireland boycott the show. Yeah. There ain't any sign of that happening since the DUP's boycott because of our RHI coverage. In fact, our audience has stayed as big as it's ever been.
Yeah.
So as long as all of you, and I know I'm irritating, I know I wind a lot of you up, as long as all of you continue to support the show, you know, we don't need to be on the Christmas card list of any political party. And I'll tell you right now, Jim, if it's a choice between asking a political party difficult questions or in some way being cosy and therefore dumping you lot, the public, I know what I'm going to choose.
Well, Stephen, the way I look at it is I wouldn't have known nothing about this scandal, only I listen to your wireless every day. And I thank God there's somebody here to tell the truth in this country. Nobody would have known nothing about it.
Well, there are plenty of other journalists doing that too. But thank you, Jim.
Okay.
Thank you. Ian Lisburn. Morning, Ian.
Good morning. Just a couple of quick points, Stephen. I watched the broadcast on Saturday of Arlene Foster's speech, and I thought it was just a futile attempt to get her retaliation in first, because the tsunami is going to hit them with the Coughlin report. I think she's teeing up the multitude for the criticism that's going to come her way, and attempting to deflect it in the direction of, well, if you remember what McMillan said when he sacked all his ministers, better to lay down the lives of your friends for your career. I think she'd put up a couple of scapegoats, but the one that I'm concerned about most, as someone who has been in the Northern Ireland Civil Service and worked in direct rule in London for the ministerial offices, I'm very, very concerned about the fate that she's storing up for the civil service here, and trying to link it to the Home Civil Service in some way.
Well, the civil service themselves, Ian, to be fair to Arlene, have said that there were big mistakes there and big regrets. The civil service themselves have said that.
Well, but if you looked at it as I did, you'll see the civil service, which I haven't worked with them, a previous generation of them, they're intimidated by the special advisors. You can see that in the way they've turned almost on each other like a pack. I mean, I've never seen that in any senior civil servants that I've worked with before. And certainly when the ones I worked with in London, in ministerial offices, the English civil service, the cream of the civil service, they certainly held our civil service in very, very high regard, because it was our civil service that kept us going throughout direct rule. It wasn't any ministerial input from here or any input from the politicians here, because all they did, in my experience, when I worked in the offices across there, in the private offices, was Northern Ireland politicians coming across to carp.
So that's that was the headline for you out of Arlene's speech, how she was criticising the civil service.
I think she's preparing to lay aside the blame that comes her way and nitpick or cherry pick, as they say now, what the criticism of the civil service, which will come. But what was very, very revealing, I think, and you've watched it, and I've watched it, was the very, very the demeanour and the very, very illuminating asides of Sir Patrick Coffin when he heard some of the evidence, both from the ministers and Mrs. Foster, and from the civil servants.
It does take a lot, though, Ian, to apologise, doesn't it? Like, it takes a lot.
Apologies, Stephen. In political terms, there are many levels of them, and my experience of them is that they have a time scale and they have a shelf life. And I think this one was an apology which was destined. I mean, it was an apology which was a non-apology in my view. It was an apology to say, look, at some stage we're going to have to apologise. Let's apologise now, and then when it comes out, when the fecal matter hits the fan, we can turn around and say, look, hang on a second, we've already apologised for all this. And you're unjustifiably making us scapegoats again. So I think it was teeing everyone up for what is coming. And but from my experience...
But how can they win, Ian? How can they win? They would have been criticised for not apologising. They've stood up and they've said they're very, very sorry.
Well, as I said, they said they're sorry, but, I mean, what else could they have said? You know, it's like the Manly Rice Davis defence. Well, they would, wouldn't they?
Ian, thank you.
Get my point?
Thank you, sir. Good morning to you. Thank you, Ian.